all we do, it can help some. I'm glad I could use some of my experiences. Maybe it would help some people to understand and to be better persons.
Welcome to In Their Words, Surviving the Holocaust, Finding Hope, a podcast preserving the testimonies of those who survived the atrocities committed by the Nazis and their racist collaborators in the 1930s and 1940s, and who shared their stories at United Nations Holocaust commemorative events around the world, reminding us of the human cost of hate and our responsibility to fight injustice. Some survivors have agreed to join us for an in-depth conversation. This is the story of Bronislaw Seibert. Bronislaw, or Broni, was born in Łódź, Poland before the Second World War. At age 6, his childhood was interrupted with the Nazi invasion into his home country. The Nazis forced 6-year-old Broni into the confines of the sealed Łódź ghetto. Broni, his younger brother, and parents survived 5 years in the ghetto, witnesses to the mass deportations of Jews unknowingly sent to Auschwitz-Birkenau, Nazi German concentration and death camp, and the Kelmo killing center. Hiding places define Broni's story of survival. Up until the last moments before his family's liberation, when the Nazis had already prepared his grave. Broni shares his testimony with us from his home in Mexico City, decades later and thousands of miles from this defining chapter of his life. He attributes his survival to his parents, who did everything in their power to protect their sons, and instances of what he can only explain as pure luck.
I was born in 1933. In Łódź, Poland. My childhood before the war, as far as I can remember it, was very pleasant, very nice. My parents were middle class, maybe high middle class. So I had everything a child could desire, starting with love of my parents.
And you were 6 years old when the Second World War began?
Yeah.
Did you understand the restrictions that were imposed upon Jews at this time?
Not fully. My parents tried to explain it. And at that time, I just couldn't understand what's the difference. I never felt any difference. I was a little child, I had friends. I never knew if they were Jews or Poles. Didn't make any difference. They were my friends, that's it. But there was a difference that was imposed on us, not of our free will. We were forced to wear a yellow star. I would ask my father, why do they want to show that we are different? The answer they would give me, they're discriminating, creating ghettos to put us all separate. I didn't understand that at all. A week or 2 weeks after Łódź was liberated, we're finding out the killing machines. And little by little, I started to understand more and more how lucky we were in the ghetto, that we were the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm. And for those that stayed in the Łódź ghetto, what was life like inside?
Life was very, very sad, very monotonous. Get up in the morning, go to work, come back, eat a little, whatever it wasn't much, go to sleep, wait for the next day. A lot of hunger, sickness, there was no heating system. So a lot of the deaths we consider natural deaths.
Mm.
That meant that they were not killed by a bullet or in a gas chamber. They died of natural death. Why? Hunger, sickness, no medicine. They were also the lucky one. They died a natural death, so-called natural death.
Right.
There were a lot of doctors, but what can a doctor do without the medicine?
Do you remember how your parents dealt with seeing such terrible things in front of them? How did they communicate to you there was still hope?
Just caring for us, loving, protecting, within their power. And the result was that we survived.
While Broni's family was spared from concentration and death camps, Illnesses and hunger threatened the lives of Jews in ghettos. The sick and weak were the first deported, often along with children and elderly, while the healthy and able were deemed useful by the Nazis. Within the Lodz ghetto, this meant contributing to the production of consumer goods and war ammunition in the ghetto's many factories. Brony's father was determined his family would not be vulnerable. When Brony was 10, his father forged a birth certificate that aged his son by 3 years. At a false 13 years old, Brony was considered eligible to work. Between Brony and his parents, there were now 3 food ration cards for the family of 4, rather than just 2. A better chance for survival.
I worked in a furniture factory. They were making chairs, beds, furniture, and toys also. Which was very funny for me, because I didn't have any toys in the ghetto. And I was working in a factory, they were making toys. And then there were a lot of contradictions. I mean, say, all those toys, and I don't have any toys. And my little brother doesn't know what the toy is. He never had a toy until he was 6 years old.
That must have been difficult. You also described a moment when you and your brother were hiding and you were holding on to him when he was just a baby. Could you tell that moment again for listeners?
Yeah. During the time in the ghetto, sometimes the Germans would surround a couple of blocks and have everybody come downstairs. And it would take some of them to left and right. One group that would go to left, maybe right, I don't know, from that place downstairs, they would take them to trucks. The other people would return to their living quarters. So my parents knew if we will go down, the 4 of us, and my parents were relatively young at that time. They didn't look so bad. Hopefully, they would be sent back to the living place. And on the roof, there was the water tank. And they put us into the water tank. And they told us, we hope we'll come back. If not, nobody knows that you are here. Start making noise. Maybe somebody will hear you, will take you out. They went downstairs. And we're holding to each other. I don't know if I was holding him to keep him out from the water, or maybe because I wanted to feel another human being with me. I never knew why, I just did. Luckily, about half an hour, I don't know, they came back and they took us out. Wet, old, luck saved us. And my parents, their effort, their sacrifice.
Certainly. You must have been very scared.
Yes, it was.
But you were saved.
Yes, we were fortunate.
In the spring of 1944, the pace of the Nazis' killing plan intensified, and they began deporting Jews from Lodz ghetto onto trains by the thousands daily. Thinking deportation couldn't lead anywhere worse than the ghetto, Brony's mother was prepared to board with her family, but his father thought otherwise, and the 4 remained. With the Nazis sweeping every corner of Lodz, places one could hide became scarce, but Brony's family would find shelter at the precise moment.
Well, the Germans were, little by little, they were saying, this part of the ghetto has to be abandoned, move to the other one. Until finally, they moved us to one block. And my parents, my mother would say, well, let's go to the street car and get it over with. It's hot here, it's summer, the children are tired. She wanted to go. And my father was the opposite. Let's wait. What are you waiting for? Well, the last day they said, okay, 700 or 800 people. Tomorrow is your turn. And that night, a friend of my father came and says, listen, I we have a hiding place. There are more people there. We have room for all of you if you want to. You're welcome to. That night we went there and there were 33 people there. And there in that hiding place, we stayed for 10 weeks without any fresh air. We did have water and some food.
By the end of August 1944, SS officers nearly liquidated the ghetto, deporting an estimated 70,000 Łódź ghetto dwellers to Auschwitz-Birkenau during this month alone. The Nazis relayed a message to families like Broni's in hiding. They sent a group of the Jews still residing in the ghetto to ask them to come out of their hiding places and return, with the promise that they would live in exchange of labor. Broni's parents accepted, and the four returned in October. In January of 1945, the Nazis prepared graves with plans to bury the remaining 779 Jews of the Łódź ghetto. Broni was 11, and at this point had lived half of his childhood under persecution.
So we stayed there until the 16th or 17th of January, 1945, when we started hearing bombs falling, not in the city. Łódź was never bombed. That night, there was rumor going around that the Germans did dig out 8 graves at the cemetery. So we, with another family, we went as far as we could. We stayed there to see what happened. Until on the 19th of January, we started hearing shouts, come out, come out. We are free already. They took a chance. They said, what happened? We are free. The Poles and the Russians are here already. Come out.
Your family decided to trust that this was real, that you weren't being lied to. How did it feel, and what happened when you were freed?
I don't know. Maybe it was the emotion of the moment, all the accumulated desire to be free. I don't know what. As if I had holding me inside, and all of a sudden it got loose. So there I went.
You passed out.
I passed out. The Russian soldiers came in, they made a big bonfire. The first thing they wanted was not to be hungry.
Broni and his family had survived and their graves would lie empty. This was true for less than 1% of the Jews who arrived at Łódź ghetto. The family of four returned to the apartment the Nazis had seized 5 years prior. Like a time capsule, the concierge was still there. Their belongings were gone, but Broni, his brother, and parents were alive. And for the first time in 5 years, they had food at the table.
The same concierge was there, so we went upstairs. Obviously, there was nothing there, and we installed them ourselves there. And the first night, we slept on the floor, and then the next day, we had a big celebration, the four of us around the table.
When the war ended, Broni's family eventually left Poland, wanting to start life anew. They found refuge first in Paris, followed by New York City, and then Venezuela in the year 1948. Broni eventually immigrated to Mexico in 1960, where he met and married his wife. They have a son and a daughter, 6 grandchildren, and are 3 times great-grandparents. At 87 years old, Broni says he hopes his story and others can live on for posterity, and that the danger of discrimination in all its forms must be taught to future generations.
You witnessed and went through a great deal because of anti-Semitism. What is your message to young generations?
My message would be not only about anti-Semitism, to avoid all kinds of discrimination because of religion, race, color, anything, that you shouldn't discriminate no matter what reason. We are all human beings and we are all equal. We are all human beings. And one human being should never discriminate.
Your story was used to develop educational materials on the Holocaust. with UNESCO, an agency of the United Nations. What role do you think the United Nations has in educating about the Holocaust?
Education.
Mm-hmm.
To show them what happens, to show them, to explain it to young kids about it, and to educate them against that, to show that you should never hate anyone. You should be taught in schools, starting probably in grammar school, little by little, showing them more and more what can happen to people if you start hating. No one is your enemy.
I thank you very much, Brony, for your time. Your testimony is a great help to that.
No, it's okay. All we do, it can help some. No problem. I'm glad I could use some of my experiences. Maybe it would help some people to understand and to be better persons.
Brony Zeibert, who with his family survived the Łódź ghetto and the Holocaust. This is, in their words, Surviving the Holocaust, Finding Hope, a podcast by the United Nations Holocaust Outreach Program. To find out more about the organization's Holocaust Remembrance and Educational Program, and how you can participate, visit www.un.org/en/Holocaust Remembrance. I'm Natalie Hutchison. Thanks for listening.